living back intact. Get faith back in the proper place. Faith in Allah. And once we establish ourselves upon the water, then we can proceed toward the other bases. So I thank Allah for that. So the Quran says then, after in the throne, in the ayah of the throne, it says, وَسِعَ كُرْسِيُّهُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. His throne extends over the skies and earth. That means everything. Not just water and land, as not water or land. Spirit. Right? As spirit. And above it is light. And then there's water and then there's land. And it says his throne extends over the skies and earth. Now we have to understand that we have to establish ourselves as a people of faith, as a people needing material development, as a people needing enlightenment, as a people needing to know how to control their spiritual inclinations. Don't you know this is science? This is science. And believe me, the highest test, the thing that challenges us most, and surviving in the water is a big challenge. But what challenges us most is surviving in the air. Oh, yes. I believe perhaps it's harder than surviving in the fire. And we have to be able to survive in all of these. How do we know that? Jesus, who ascended into heaven, didn't he first descend into hell and came out, survived it? See, a lot of us don't pay attention to those things. Prophet Muhammad, who ascended into heaven, didn't he descend into hell and survive it? So, dear beloved people, we have to belong to a community that have insight. Its leaders, its governing body, has to have insight into the knowledge of how to establish people materially, spiritually, academically, and in every other way. Because if you don't, one of these quarters of life are going to be the factor for tearing your other foundations down. You see? So we can't go too far if we just going to attach ourselves to business interests. We have to keep the moral base strong first. And no matter how far we verge out for political concerns, our material concerns, no matter how far we verge out, we have to always bring up that base, that moral base. Never become detached from your moral base. For after all, what is faith in God except a manifestation of the moral needs in man? A man can't master his fellow man and demand obedience of his fellow man on his own strength. It's been tried. He needs something superior to himself. Man just won't obey man. He follows man up to a certain point, and he stops. Anytime the situation gets difficult for him, and the situation starts biting on him and making him uncomfortable, he will turn on, he will reject man. He rejects man. But if it's God, he will hold on. He will hold on. Man will fail man, but the right concept of God never fails us. You see? Never fails us. So let us understand philosophically the religion and the life that we belong to. This is growing up.
Yes, sir.
This is what is meant by growing up. So don't think belief in God is just something that's just thrown out here into our life. I believe in God because God exists. You have to understand the many benefits that come to us from believing in God. Belief in God enables us to establish life on moral grounds and on grounds of faith. None of us can satisfy the curiosity, the mental or intellectual curiosities of our fellow man. None of us can satisfy those curiosities. There are going to be questions that your mind is going to ask me that I just can't answer because my human limitations have not prepared me for it. Won't allow me to go that far. But on the basis of faith in God, belief in God, we establish our limitations. Look, we are limited. We are not God. There's divine and human. There's God and man. And we come to a conclusion on the basis of what we know of life, on basis of what we know of our experiences as human beings, we come to the conclusion that there is a bigger reality than us. So we establish then grounds for faith. And all of this is a moral requirement in the life of man. Because man's moral life wants him to grow. And he's not satisfied. No matter how much materialism you give him, no matter how wealthy you make him, no matter how much political power you give him, there's some men that's not going to be satisfied with that if they know that happiness in this life requires full vision. And it is this holy book, the Quran, that requires of us that we come into full vision. God says, وَاتَّقِي مَا أَتَاكَ اللَّهُ دَارُ الْآخِرَةِ وَلَا تَنْسَى نَصِيبَكَ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا. He says, seek with the means that He has made possible for you, the hereafter, the life after, but don't forget your share of this material world. That's balance, isn't it?
Yep.
And God also says that He is all-knowing. All-knowing. And that He is the one who taught man. Is that right?
Yeah.
He is the one who taught man. And then He promises that He's going to establish one from among the common people. He will establish one from among the illiterates who will have the command of knowledge. He will make a judge. He will make a learned man. He will make one who have the ability to use the tools of the intellect to distinguish between right and wrong, to make judgment in fine areas where intellect must be strongly developed. Yes, and we know that Muhammad, the prophet, said, peace be on him, he said that higher education is the lost property of the believer. He also said, go as far as to China in search of knowledge. So here we see important put on knowledge, important put on spiritual life, important put on material life, important put on knowledge, right? And then he also says that he who neglect to make contributions, to spend on the moral development of his soul, loses his life. So here the emphasis is put on moral development, right? And it also says that he made man and put him in the earth to be a ruler. So there is the emphasis on political power, right? Says that he made him a khalifa in the earth. It has rendered everything in his environment to be of service to him. So that means he's not only to be a leader, he's not only to be head of a government or head of an order, but he is to take into his concerns all of the environment.
Yes, sir.
The land, the water, the things that grow, the sky, the air, the thunder, the storms. Look how man has taken all those things into consideration. And look how man has gotten ahead of man that failed to take all those things into consideration. Look at the Western world now with its high technology, with its great industry. telling us about the possibility in the future of us using sun energy, benefiting from the energy of the sun. Look how they study the stars and go out in space looking for new utility, new resources, new information that will improve life in the family of man. Look how they are obeying the directives of God. And look how so many of us are ignorant. And we can see the difference, can't we? We can see how come, you know, one black Muslim, and I say black Muslim to distinguish him from this Muslim. Black Muslim, colored Muslim. See, he's black Muslim, I'm rainbow Muslim. Universal Muslim. All the colors are here. So, he says, we have to talk about the state of black people in the world. He says, because everywhere I go, I find black people down. Black people in the inferior position. And he seems to think that the answer is to unite against the white man. Where the teachings and knowledge that we find in the scripture suggest that the answer is to go back and start living your life in the full fashion instead of in a half fashion. Go back and pick up and start living your life in a full fashion. Broaden your concerns. Accept more responsibility. Accept to be the man that God made you to be. Accept to be the Khalifa. We think that's the answer. The answer is not to unite against the white man. The answer is to look at yourself and see where God gave you the same invitation. And the white man been answering that part of the invitation, and you haven't. So don't go fight the white man. Maybe God will be on his side. At least in that matter. So don't go fight the white man, but look at your own life and see, have you accepted the invitation that Allah gave you to be a ruler in the earth, responsible for whatever he finds in his environment? Praise be to Allah. Don't you know, if we can accept just that one idea, just that one concept of man, that God made him Khalifa, if we can accept that, oh, our life will show improvement. Because if I accept that, that means I can't go and cry to Washington and say, Washington, come down here to Atlanta and give us some jobs. The whole Quran doesn't say, I looked through it cover to cover, very painstakingly, and I haven't seen anywhere there where it say, go to Washington. It says, look at yourself. And if you haven't been measuring up to what God made you, see, if God has made you something, man, that's what you are. The potential is there. The ability is there. The capacity is there. Now, if you look at your behavior, if you look at your history behind you, and you see you haven't been measuring up to what God made you, then what you do is first, do what the prophets did or do in the Quran. Do what the righteous do when they come to the realization that they have a share in their own situation. Zalamtu nafsi. Allahumma, O God, inni zalamtu nafsi. Surely I have been oppressing myself. Isn't that wonderful? That's the great courage we need. other factor, not the white man. The white man can't oppress us if we want to be free. No, he can't oppress us, not if we want to be free. So it's more important to say, oh God, we confess our faults. We have been oppressing ourselves. Then you can start to correct the problem. If I get about the business of liberating my own potential, if I get about the business of opening the environment up for my growth and my productivity, if I get about the business of establishing myself, and then the white man come against me, the world will be on my side. But if I'm not about the business of establishing myself, and I'm constantly crying out that the white man is holding me down, the world wonders. The world say, well, hell, when are they going to see their share in their own power? Now, dear beloved people, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a man who could see the white man's wrong in the situation and also our own wrong in the situation. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad didn't just blame the white man. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad blamed us too. See, you don't have to be in the situation you're in. He said, why don't you get up and do something for yourself? Isn't that what he said? All right. Some of us, we want to make believe that we can't do anything for ourselves until the white man dies. And we're going to wait around here forever on him to die before we get up and do something for ourselves. That won't work. I believe that God will prolong the life of the white man, even if his doomsday is due. I believe as long as we have that attitude, God will prolong the life of the white man. But he knows that once the white man dies, Earth is going to die too. Well, you ain't preparing yourself to keep the earth alive. Pardon me. God would like to see better people in charge. But rather than see no people in charge, he keeps the worst people going on. So let us see our share in the problem. And let us understand that our religion require of us more than just to come to this place here. And make our prayer. And listen to a good talk, the good talks. I know they are good talks. I listen to them myself. They are very good talks. And then go back home and wait for Juma or wait for Sunday. That's a shame. Allah requires more of us than that. When you come and hear the invitation in this religion, you're supposed to go out and do your job. Many of us don't know the hajj that we make at least once in our life if we're able. Brings us together with Muslims from all over the world. We perform the rituals of the Hajj, and after we complete them, we come back home, right? Many of us don't know that we are supposed to come back home with a new life. The Hajj represents a turning point in our life, and we are supposed to come back home with a new life. You're supposed to come back home, and if you have been working with the mind of a naturalist, you're supposed to drop that mind doing the rituals of the Hajj. There you're supposed to leave, you're supposed to discard that mind. If you went there to ask God to help you and your family, to help you all with your material needs or something like that, or to pray for spiritual insight for yourself, or for your family, or for your community, you're supposed to discard that during the rituals of the Hajj. And you're supposed to come back understanding that the bigger job and the bigger vision is the universal one. You're supposed to come back to your home accepting the responsibility for not only the fate of yourself and your family, but the fate of the whole globe. It brings man in contact with the global concerns of man. And he's supposed to go back to his home with a universal mind, with a global vision, and accepting his responsibility for the fate of the whole human family. How is that going to help him? Look, if I have been working for Wallace, Y.W. Dean, or Wallace and Shirley, and my children, and I go there and get a new vision, a new aspiration, and I come back now and the responsibility on me is not to work for Wallace and Shirley and the children, but to work for the fate of the world, to work to improve the fate of the world, don't you know I'm going to become a bigger Wallace, a bigger family man, a bigger father, a bigger husband? The little task that I had at home is going to become small. That little thing will be easy. All right, look here. I don't know. The greatest knowledge is in the insight. There's one philosopher, he said, it's not looking at the world or on the world, but it's looking into the world. That's what a great Western philosopher said. And that's what we're talking about right now. Not just don't look on the surface of things. You have to understand the theories, the theoretical laws, the principles upon which all this operates. I hope that's not too heavy. Should be. And dear beloved people, the principle of growth and productivity is something that we must don't know. I don't think we know it. Let me share this with you. If you go to establish a business to support you and your family, and you establish that business without the knowledge of the universal law of growth or productivity, most likely you are not going to survive as a businessman. You will do something, but yours will go away. In time, yours will go away. Even if you pass it on to your children, in time, your children are going to lose it. But another man, he sets out to do the same thing. He sets out too to establish means upon which he and his family will be able to survive. But he has the understanding, he has the universal vision, he has the understanding of the universal principle operating in this particular field. He passes this on to his children. His children have a greater motivation in their lives. His children will work on while your children are giving up the business. Your children will be giving up the business. And his children will still be working at that business. Because they are working for something that their personal life, their dignity, requires. Their personal dignity demands of them that they don't give up, that they succeed, that they make a contribution not only to themselves, but a contribution to the image and dignity of man. See the difference? And there are people, Greeks, Romans, Egyptians, Many, many great nations have come into that vision, have come into that understanding, and they have done work that lasts for thousands of years. Look at the Western world now. We think of America as being a new world, a new country, but actually it's not. This is just a new stage in the growth of the Western man. He came from Europe. He was once an Englishman, a Roman, and his principles and his vision has grown out of that soil. It's not a new one, it's a continuation. Is that not correct? You who understand the history, you know that. The Constitution, what is it but an improvement on the what they call the Magna Carta? Right? Yes. So here is the people who are the vision. Now, most of us, you know, with our mind, we wouldn't have even remembered the Magna Carta. Okay, dude, say, man. We got to draw a plan now to survive in America, man, in a new land, in a new world. Anybody got any ideas? You know, how many of us would say, let's first consider what enabled our ancestors to survive. And let us extract from that everything that can help us here. And then let us complement that or put whatever is necessary to make it complete and useful for us in this new situation. See, that's longevity. That's life. That's longevity, isn't it? See? Well, that's what we have to learn. We have to come into that mind. And believe me, white man that you see succeeding, white man that you see with his family established, and he can count back into generations, my father was this, his father, his father, his father. Man, they operating on something more than what you operating on. They ain't just out there trying to make a buck. They operating on something bigger than that. They got a vision of what reality is for man, of what responsibility in the world is for man. They got a vision of what God has ordained for man as his role and purpose in life. They have more as a burden on them than just making something for Sally and the children. Yes! And that's how come they stay in it. That's how come they succeed. That's how come they're still working. That's how come they still have the world. We have to get that. That's the only way. Du Bois, a great learned intellect. A lot of you know of Du Bois. Du Bois, that man had independent philosophical insight into many of the problems of education for African Americans. And he brought out certain observations, or established certain observations and pointed certain directions. But what happened? The concern wasn't broad enough. The knowledge of man's purpose in the world and of the universal principles that operate to do away with and to support life, they didn't have it. So as a consequence, the enthusiasm was short-lived, and it's gone. Now, dear beloved people, understand the religion of Islam and its universal concept, and understand that this is the problem it's addressing. It doesn't want any man to be without this knowledge. This is not knowledge just for the few or for the elite. This is knowledge for every man. Every man must understand his role and purpose that God has given him. And must understand that though he be on the bottom, though he be the least man in the government or in the citizenry, the responsibility for the fate of the government, for the fate of the citizenry, is on his shoulders as much as it is on anybody else's. And that whatever he's doing in his place, if he's doing it with that understanding, then he is a key factor in the support, in the life, in the strength, in the survival of the government and the society. But when that's not there, what happens? You dissipate your resources. You don't have the courage, you don't have the motivation to accept heavy responsibilities. You become non-productive. You become the coon that we were talking about last night, satisfied to be uprooted over and over again, as long as you can find plenty of leftovers from the white man. This is the problem. This is it. No need of looking for any other solution. This is the answer. The book says, as a man thinketh, so is he. If you think small, you're going to stay small. If you think big, you're going to become big. So, dear beloved people, it's a matter of how we think, how we see. That decides our behavior. If we begin to think in the right way and think in the full scope of this religion, and not just in prayer and coming to the message on Sunday or Friday, but thinking to the full scope of this religion, you see this community grow, become more responsible, become more productive, become more competitive. I would like to see us in the forefront as competitors. I would like to see us in the forefront of the competition. I would like to see people looking us up when they have a town problem, a city problem, an agricultural problem, a job problem, an industry problem. I would like to see them saying, well, maybe we better invite the Muslims into this discussion. Wouldn't that be dignity? When we are competing and doing so well, that whenever there's a crisis for the town, or a crisis for the nation, they will say, where's Joseph? Where's Daniel? Right? Yeah. You know, they can't ignore. Now, those were men that they had as subjects, right? Those were men that they had as subjects. But those men had proven such great insight and proven such great vision that they had to call on those men when their kingdom got in trouble. Wouldn't you like to see ourselves in that dignified situation? Believe me, if you accept the call to Al-Islam and you grow in this religion, you don't be satisfied just to come here and sit down and go back home and do the same old thing again. But you study this religion for new steps to take, for improvement on your life. You study the Quran and you study life of Prophet Muhammad, and you come here and you learn from the Imam, and you get new direction. You get new indication of where you should go from here, and you step out there. Don't let the Imam keep talking about the need for business and you don't do something about it. Do something about it. Excuse me. It pleased me to see that businesses here in Atlanta, Muslims, fast food business, Muslims trying to buy together, wholesale, so they reduce the cost on each proprietor so they can make more income. That's beautiful. We want to see more of that. We need more of that. We're going to have to do more economically, do more in a business fashion. We're growing now, I think, as people who want to head up the work in the field of education. We have some books that have been written, very nice, that I've looked at. A good start. We are starting to do something now. The imam here showed me two books that he had done. They both look very good. I finished reading the book on charity today. I went through it. Looked very good. Very good book. That's good. That's dignity. I wonder if we understand that. And you read it. It's a quality book on charity. Done in a very good way. The news of that book should make you feel very good. Because here is one of your people, one of your members, now have produced a book on charity that can be put in the library on the same shelf with the book on charity by some other scholar. But the difference is, this book shows your growth. This book shows your worth, shows your intellect. That's dignity. A brother imam and his wife from Tallahassee, they also have produced a book on Bilal. Very good book, nice reading and everything, very nice. And there are others who are working. The imam has produced a book on also Imam Macha on Arabic script, which is very good for practice and penmanship, the writing of the characters. He's working on a book of simple arithmetic. Very good, I saw it. He has very good idea, looks very good to me. This is a dignified beginning. A dignified beginning. Do you recall the book that was entitled Muhammad's Children? It was put out by the University of Islam under the leadership of Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And actually that book was just really a picture story book. It showed the assets, the accomplishment, the material accomplishment of the Nation of Islam, and introduced the children of the University of Islam. It was called Muhammad's Children. It was put in hardback. Because then, the average one of you had a quota you had to give. You couldn't come here and just sit on this floor. You had to first stop at the secretary's office and give your dues. And you didn't say how much you were going to give. They told you how much to give. You had to give enough to cover the expenses of the mess debt and the school. Right? Yeah, you call that, you see. So they had money. Because you were given more. And they used the money and put a hardback, nice hardback on this book called Muhammad's Children. And I looked at that book, I said, this is great. This is a dignified start. Where the African American is putting a book into the hand of his children that he produced. Doesn't that mean something? Yes, believe me, that means everything. That means everything. Anytime 25 million or 30 million people exist in a country and everything they have is produced by a white man, oh, that's depressing. That's depressing. That makes us feel that we are nothing. That makes us feel that we have to depend on a white man, that we can't live without a white man. And if we don't feel the urge to produce these things ourselves, that's proof that we are mentally dead. That we have been intimidated as a people. We have been frightened out of the dignity of a man. That's what it proves. That we have let the overwhelming or the wide and very obvious presence of the white man and his accomplishment frighten us out of the competition. The white white man's presence in this world doesn't frighten me out of the competition. It bears on my conscience. It pricks my conscience. It disturbs me every day. It makes me want to get into the competition. It's a situation that I can't tolerate. If I open my eyes, I look at the white man. My house, my furniture, my TV, my everything. I step out of my door, the fence, the yard, the car, the sidewalk, the street, the light posts, the plane that goes above my head. White man. I'm sick of looking at the white man that can't see myself. I don't think that that intimidates me. That makes me uncomfortable, very uncomfortable. That is the motivation in me to get into the competition. Well, hell, you may say this is starting very small, talking about producing your own textbook. Well, that's beginning somewhere, isn't it? First, we should want to at least get some kind of respect for our right to feed the intellect of our own people. If the white men are producing all the textbooks, if he's producing all the books, then who is feeding the intellect of our children? The white man is feeding the intellect of our children. You may say, well, what's wrong with that? Isn't this a free country? Hell, it ain't a free country for one people to dominate another to that extent. Excuse me. We're going to have to wake up to these things. This is the hardest job. Believe me, I wish we could understand Scripture. If you understand Scripture, you would say that man is following God's will. Jam up. Let's look back on scale. Are you getting too tired? I hope you're not. Let's quickly look back on Scripture. Let's find a people that we can use as an example, as a model, to compare the lives, okay? You know that's the Hebrews. The so-called Jews who were in bondage to a hard taskmaster and his people. Pharaoh and, we're told, the Egyptians, right? Look what happened. The man that they called the liberator, Moses, he was born to a woman of the oppressed people in a community that was called Goshen. Now, Goshen wasn't Egypt proper. It was like a colony of Egypt, away from the main arteries of Egypt. But it was under Egypt. It was under the Egyptians. And the mother, she feared for the future of her son. And God had inspired her to see how to put her son in a better situation, so her son would grow into his future, or into the role that God intended for him. So the mother, she takes the son, as God inspired her to do, and she puts the little baby, while it was yet an infant, in a basket, and seals the basket up like a boat, so water wouldn't come into it, and she just put it on the river. No oars, no navigator. She trusted God just that much. The river was naturally flowing toward Egypt. It was just the natural flow of the water to go toward Egypt. So she puts the little baby in the basket and put him on the river, and the river floated him down to Egypt proper. And the wife of Pharaoh saw the little child washed up on the shore, and she pulled him out. Right? She pulled him out.